And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Welcome to Rates and Barrels. It's a live one. It's Friday, March 8th. Derek Van Riper, Eno Sarah, Trevor May, all here with you. On this episode, we are going to dig into a bunch of recent stories that were written on The Athletic, including one that breaks down some of the secret sauce in the Rays organization with catching targets. We've got pitches that have multiple shapes as a way of expanding an arsenal, something that Sahadev Sharma wrote about, focusing on Justin Steele, but we're going to expand on that a bit. We've got our deep dive focusing on sliders and sweepers, and Eno had a collaboration piece that just went out today with Ken Rosenthal, looking at the possible links between sweepers and arm injuries, which is a great place to start. So, you know, you had this collaboration piece that just went up, and the $1 million, maybe $1 billion question people have been racking their brains about doing research on for years is, how do you keep pitchers healthy? Like, that is the main question, and I feel like a lot of people try to work backwards. They try to find a thing that's causing guys to get hurt and reduce that or eliminate that, but what do you think is really going on with the sweeper and some of the things you were looking at in this story?
It's really difficult to talk about pitcher injury. There are like camps that are like, we have the perfect mechanics, and like if you pitched like we pitched, you would never get hurt. There are definitely those acolytes that are out there. They don't usually throw 102. And so that to me is the actual source of injury. It's velo. If you look at it, Driveline has a piece about if you just put the Moda sleeve on the elbow and you test which ones, you know, stress your elbow the most, it's fastballs. It's the velo. If you look at different studies, you know, Jeff Zimmerman's injury ratings on my pitching ranks, those are one of the biggest things in there is fastball velo, you know, also previous injury, but fastball velo. It's because there's been research from Glenn Fleissig at ASMI about how velo itself is a big stressor. Sitting closer to your maximum velo is a big stressor. So, you know, there is a little bit of a thing where breaking ball velo is maybe slightly more stressful per sort of mile per hour. But nobody's only... Jake DeGrom and like Justin Verlander are throwing 90 mile an hour sliders. I guess there's Hunter Brown. There's very few people who are doing that. And so I think it really is, the answer is it's velo. Now, sweepers, there was the beginning thing was we need to chase this movement profile, but you will notice, like I talked to Griffin Jacks and he's like, why is my sweeper one of the best in the business? I throw it 88. It still has like the same movement profile as these big sweepers and I throw mine 88. So that's why it's basically, you know, one of the top three sweepers in the game. You know, so if you are going to chase velo on these big moving pitches, I think it's just as risky as sort of throwing a power curve at 85. And we've seen some people, you know, Lance McCullers threw a power curve at 85. He was hurt. Then he threw a sweeper at 84 and he was hurt. Which one hurt him more? I don't know. Craig Kimbrell has thrown the 85 mile an hour power curve forever. And he's actually been really healthy. I mean, he also throws really hard. So I think I was saying to you off air, I think it's really frustrating to discuss injuries in pitching because there's a matter of expertise that's really hard to achieve. Like I've read a lot of peer reviewed research and I don't consider myself an expert on pitching injury. And, you know, the people who do know speak in such a language that it's almost hard to keep up with them. And then we have it generally right now in our society, I think a little bit of a distrust of experts. And so, and then the experts themselves don't all necessarily agree on every bit about what injury is. And the last part we have is like an explosion of information and data and tech right now, where biomechanics is something that people are researching. Most of the time, they're using biomechanics to get more velo because that's where the money is. But we are also trying to use biomechanical research to keep pitchers healthy. I mean, that is definitely part of arm care, part of, you know, simplifying people's deliveries, getting people to go, you know, get more of their energy toward home plate. There are different things in the biomechanical, you know, book that are trying to keep pitchers healthier. They do care about that, but I would just say they care about velo more, and velo is the big stressor. That's, I think, the math that's really going underlying everything.
People want like an answer, right? Like, should I throw this pitch or should I not throw this pitch? And unfortunately, it's just like most things in life, and it's pretty contextual. And the things you can, I think we're never going to get past the point where there's like, it's more specific than like a general, like velo will increase your stress in your arm, so therefore probably logically injury. Now that's not exactly true for everybody. There's guys who throw, who technically like throw their breaking balls harder with more effort because they never threw really hard. So they use their fastball as something to set up their breaking ball. There's guys in the big leagues like that, they're where the breaking ball is the most stressful because they actually put more effort
to throw hard. They throw it very hard.
Now, those are outliers, but they exist. So it comes down to that. And I know Dr. Meister too is like, he's always interested in something new in the game that a pitcher's doing, and then how that affects, like knowing what the effects of that could be is like, because he does, you know, orthopedic surgeon, does all the Tommy John surgery. So knowing that stuff will inform possible adjustments to surgeries later, or where guys might be getting hurt in the same place or something. So like it is that's something that he's just a really curious guy too. If you ever met him, he loves surgery.
That's what he sees. Like he sees the car crashes every day, you know? So he's exactly. He doesn't see necessarily all the people throwing sweepers that don't see him.
They don't get hurt or don't ever get hurt. Yeah,
so he just sort of sees things through recency this, like bias, maybe. Everybody's getting hurt. I mean, so he's thinking like, you know, sweepers are rampant and they're causing all these injuries. He's seeing some people with sweepers that are getting surgery. But last year, sweepers were 3% of all pitches thrown in baseball. I just don't think like that's what's causing like a rampant thing. However, there was something I really want your opinion on, Trevor, is that, you know, I had a pitching coach be like, I don't think the sweeper is that big a deal. It's just it's like a curveball. It's just another curveball grip. You had a slightly different opinion just from having thrown a sweeper, and you've thrown a curveball and you've thrown a sweeper. What was the difference sort of mechanically and for you, like, you know, in that process?
A lot of it comes down to like how a pitcher is thinking about the pitch. And so there's kind of two ways to kind of go about learning a new pitch. One is, and this is the one that I like to start with, is figuring out like how you naturally put pressure on the ball with your fastball, and then like design a grip based on that. So you're not doing anything differently to achieve, you're doing as little differently as possible to achieve the greatest effect you possibly can. But when it comes to a sweeper, most people don't throw a pitch that's similar, because the spin axis is more of a sideways spin as opposed to a tumbling spin for a curveball. So you can think, I used to think like fastball, curveball were opposites of each other, or you're trying to think that. They're not technically that, because it's really hard to throw a perfect 12-6 unless you're straight over the top. But whatever your arm angle is, you want the axis to be opposite of that angle, if that makes sense. So that would be like, they're connected in that way, meaning like if this feels like it's associated with how your fastball feels. Now the sweeper, I realized, it just felt different. So when you're feeling something different, that usually means something's moving in a different way than normal.
Maybe you're not built up in that way. Maybe your arm's
and
not
you
built up.
You might not be built up that way. That's the thing. Like, who knows if that's if you're actually hitting a place on your arm that actually is fine to handle this, and you'll be okay. You'll just get sore and then you'll get through it. Or if it's too weak. So then we're getting into like guy by guy, it's different for everybody. But you are technically kind of throwing a pitch outside of that realm. So it's slightly different than a curveball. And some guys think of it way differently. Some guys think of it very similarly. And those small adjustments could adjust how you're throwing it in the game, which might affect your getting hurt. So it's like a lot of it has to do with that, just so you can repeat it. Because if it feels weird every time and it feels differently weird every time, you keep doing that, you're probably going to get hurt, because that's what I look at. I go, how weird does this feel?
Yeah, I do think there is some risk with like fads, you know, like, oh, we declare this the year of the cutter or the year of the splitter, the year of the sweeper. And so then you have people who shouldn't necessarily be throwing it. Like there are over the top guys who are throwing sweepers. And I'm like, I don't know that your biomechanics are set up very well. Your slot is set up very well for this. Like to me, a sweeper goes really well with a sinker for almost the same reasons that you're talking about with the four seam fastball and a regular curveball, is that the sinker and the sweeper are both kind of pitches you want to be on the side of, that kind of you are better for a certain slot, not over the top. There's kind of, you know, two thirds ish kind of stuff. So if you are out there, you have a low spin efficiency fastball, that's when I would talk to you about a sweeper, because I think it would fit your slot. It would fit your mechanics. It wouldn't feel that weird. So, you know, I did just talk to Brady Singer, and, you know, he's trying to do two new things this year. He's a sinker slider guy. He's got a power slider. We talked about his sinker. Well, he's trying to throw a four seam and a sweeper. And maybe that's actually a pretty good, at least the sinker and the sweeper part, you think is a pretty good combo. And since he has a power slider that can theoretically work against lefties, you know, the sweeper can get righties out and the four seam can give him a fastball option against lefties where he's not, we sort of showed that he's kind of throwing the sinker in places where lefties don't mind seeing it. So, you know, he said he's getting 17 IVBs on that thing, which surprised me. And I think I offended him with my surprise.
I would have loved to be. Do you like fall back a little bit? Like a couple says, whoa. He's like, whoa.
No.
Dude,
no, he saw the eyebrows move even behind the sunglasses. And that
I got a text from PR. So
that's funny. That's really funny.
We'll work it out. I apologize. I was like, I was not trying to say anything was crappy. I was just.
That
like,
surprises me too, though, to be honest. I'm pretty surprised he can throw that kind of ride just based on his motion.
That's what I was saying. I was prepared to be. I was like, you don't need to get the big, you know, 17s and 18s because you're just trying to differentiate off your sinker, right? And he's like, well, I'm getting 17s. I was like,
Well, then. Awesome.
Is there something even if it's not a sweeper, like if you're just throwing a new pitch, does it usually feel a little weird? And then is there an adjustment period that you're kind of okay with before you start to worry about causing a physical problem with something that you're doing differently?
Yeah. I when it comes down to it, like, especially for me, I could not get anywhere near like a game speed, not in a game. So there's guys who can just throw 98 in the bullpen. I could not even touch like 92 in a bullpen, and then I go on the game and be like 96 first game.
Just need
like
that adrenaline.
The way I am. Yeah. So I wouldn't know until I threw it in games, and that's why I tended just to run and gun with it and just go out there with it, because it just that's how I needed to practice it. And I learned that with the splitter, it just never felt normal. Frankly, I didn't have enough time to get it there, and I just kind of half baked it and then tried to run with it. And this is not a pitch you do that with. And so it actually ruined. I tried to change everything else to get it closer to the splitter, so the splitter felt normal. And then I ruined everything else. And then that also hurt too, to change. So there is an amount of time you want to like start to feel comfortable with it. Mine was always like, how comfortable can I be the first time? Like how through a catch play session of 40 throws, 50 throws, how close can I get to comfort in that one day? That'll tell me how quickly I'm going to pick this pitch up. If it's feeling okay and I just don't know how it's moving yet, and it doesn't matter where I'm throwing it or command or anything, but if it feels okay and I feel like, oh, I could get this quick, you kind of know intuitively quickly if it's going to be something that you're going to adjust to fast or if you're going to need more time. And if you need more time, that's generally a higher injury risk.
Another thing that Keith Meister said that was, I would say that like just I'm less sure than him. Like I would rather if you wanted me to say one thing, I'd say like I think it's velo. I don't know about anything beyond that. But one thing he was saying was that these the power changeup and the sweeper require holding the ball harder because you're trying to get more spin and turn that spin into movement, and that holding the ball harder is also part of this. We've done some research, I've read some peer-reviewed research. Most of it says there's no relationship between grip strength and spin rates, but not all of it. And I just wondered, what do you think when you think about holding the ball hard?
Yeah, that also is like kind of, it's very interesting because of how the crazy range of grip strength is. Like, from like, I actually sit there where everyone's doing their grip strength thing. You're like, guys you think are like super strong aren't, and some guys who are like not, you wouldn't peg as super grip strength, or like have super strong grip. At the end of the day, you're trying to create a certain amount of friction on the ball to get it to spin, but you also don't want it to stick in your hand. So it's like there's a range of grip.
Still has to leave your hand.
Yeah, it still has to leave your hand. So if you're gripping it too tightly, like, you're going to slow down the spin. It's like a bell curve. So yeah. If you think about it that way, like, that's an adjustment in pitches you can make as well. But like, generally, if you're holding the ball tighter, like, generally, obviously your muscles are more active, get fatigued faster, and then it could lead to, you know, more injury. That makes sense. And then you attach that to, usually that's attached to velo and trying to throw something harder or spin it faster, which then produces more velo on generally.
Did you like have pitching coaches that increasingly over time were telling you to hold the ball harder?
They would say, like, have you tried gripping it tighter?
Or
have
they would. Tried? Okay, so that is something you've heard.
That's an old, not old school because it's still a thing, but like, that was one of the adjustments you could have made when you're trying to fix something. I've also heard the other way, like, barely hold it, like it's a cloud, like for your changeup. Like I never needed to know that. I was comfortable. Like, I was trying to help guys throw their changeups because they would just grip the crap out of them because it didn't feel comfortable and it didn't feel like it was slipping out of their hand all the time. But that was never a problem for me. It just sat in there like a pickleball scoop. Like, I could just, you know, like a chuck it. I could just throw a changeup. It was just like natural for me. So all of that stuff goes in, goes together as well. But yeah, I think the grip strength generally, like, that's a pretty, I feel like that's again, it's a very general thing. But you're like, if you're gripping the ball harder, like Class now said it about the sticky stuff thing.
Yeah,
he did. Gripping the ball way tighter because I can't throw them, because I'm just worried about my curveball sucking now. And I'm like, I mean, that was kind of an admission, but at the same time, like,
yeah.
But at the same time, that, like, if you don't think anyone was trying to somehow get the ball prepped in some way that it feels comfortable every single time, because balls are different every time, then you're crazy. Everyone had something. There's very few guys who were like, "Dad, just run out there and grab whatever." Luther right. Could do that. He's like, he could just grab a high school ball and just rip a curveball. Like, but that was just his.
But that was also something interesting coming out of the minors. How different the ball was in the minors. Normal now, but like, it used to be the seams were totally different. I had some pitcher tell me, like, I got to the majors and I tried to my normal arm path and the ball just, like, I just lost it. It went straight up.
But that said, it is actually, I noticed this last year, the standardization of the balls was better. It really was. It could have been being in California. I mean, that's helpful. But that was a whole thing too. So yeah, all that stuff's kind of correlated for sure.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Great piece to check out if you haven't seen it already from Eno and Ken Rosenthal up on The Athletic as of this morning. Let's move on to another story that came out this week. This was about catcher targets and the Rays really simplifying things for a lot of pitchers they acquire basically getting guys to trust their stuff in the zone by giving them one target. And we talked about this during our meeting a couple days ago, Trevor. You said you were kind of like onto this because of, I think, a Shane McClanahan start where he threw something like 60 pitches with the same target and was still dominant anyway.
I was so excited when you're like, did you see the article written about a Rays catchers? And then I'm like, let me guess what it was about. And was it about them all having one target? And he's like, yeah. So I try not to tell stories, but like this needs to be told. This is just perfect for this example. Last year, I am on the IL, the anxiety IL, and I'm trying to figure out the pitch clock and how to speed things up for myself and just simplify like my process of deciding what to throw, because I realized how complicated it was and that it was really like I had to keep an eye on the clock to make sure I had time. And that wasn't a way, I just realized that wasn't a way I was going to be able to pitch, or anybody can pitch. So I was like, what's a simple way to do it? And I had a comp because I was starting to throw sweepers more too. I comped myself to Jason Adams. So that's where this started. I was watching Jason Adams starts, or not starts, outings. I'm like, okay, so what are they doing? He moves really quick too. And he's got three pitches and he knows, he's like, what's he doing? Because we throw kind of the same arsenal a little bit. And, you know, he's got a crazy sweeper, but like that, we were doing the same type things. I'm like, if I did that, like I could, you know, turn things around a little bit here. So I just watched him and then I noticed, his catcher doesn't move ever. And then I'm like, okay, well, let's bring up the ace then. Let's bring up McClanahan. What are they doing for him? So he's the guy who would like he throws all the pitches and he's like their ace, and maybe he has more freedom to move guy around. I go look, and there, sure enough, 60 straight pitches up and into righties, and big target up, like bottom of the mask. Both Mejia and Bethancourt were doing it too. So I'm like, this isn't just a guy. We're realizing how they keep getting the pitching like this, because they're simplifying it and they're saying, this is what you do best. Just throw everything. They love tunneling, except for, we talked about Eflin. He's the only guy who's an anti-tunneler. He wasn't tunneling like everybody else. But they aim for this target and just throw all your pitches off it. And then these are the way your shapes move. So like you're gonna get good results if you constantly throwing out of this tunnel. So I did that same thing. I templated out my own. I go, okay, I'm gonna do this. I told Shea Langeliers we're going up and into Tirides with a big target, because my slider will be a strike, my sweeper still be a strike, my changeup will fade down and in, we'll get the swings that I want, and the fastball go up and in. That's my swing and miss. So I'm like, this is going to be great to pretty much everybody.
And we don't have to fiddle around for the clock stuff. You don't have to fiddle around with the target.
No, anymore. I just know it's three options every time. It's one target. So I don't have to tell you what side. I don't have anything. You just go slider and then put it right in the same place. And then we adjusted, because umpires were just calling strikes for strikes. They were even better this year than they were the year before. So it's like they're getting better at it and they're not getting fooled as much. And then so let's just take advantage of this. And frankly, Shea's like, I'm not trying to grab strikes all the time anyways. Like, let's stay in the zone. Let's actually throw real strikes. I don't need to.
steal every single strike.
I remember doing that. I talked to Shea. She's like, yeah, because Shea's awesome. And he's just like, that's awesome. That's a great idea. And we did it. And then I came back and then kind of was Jason Adam for the rest of the year. But another guy I had a conversation with, so I was super excited about this. I talked to Fujinami about it. I said, hey, where's your main target? Where's your one fastball you can throw? He said, down middle. I think I mentioned that. Don't throw it there. Just never throw your fastball down the middle or low, ever. Throw up. And I was like, just have Shea set up middle and let your splitter work off of it and your slider work off of it and your fastball. And he started doing that. His walk rate dropped to a 3 instead of, 12 per 9. And, he it took a little bit, but he revert back into like getting fine a little bit, but just let your stuff play. And then he took that to Baltimore. I talked to James McCann. We got traded. I said, hey, he wants to do everything. Get him on his best pitches and have him just give him one target and you'll be all right. And he did it. And then I talked to Hefner this offseason about it. I'm like, hey, because he knows we've had that conversation, something adjacent to that. So expect big things out of Fujinami again, in my opinion. I think it's going to be, he's going to keep getting better. But like, yeah, it was something I noticed just looking at a guy from the team. I was like, why is he so good? And
Trevor, that is so hilarious. I came up to Shea at some point and was like, have you thought about one target for Fuji? I talked to him about that in like, because I've been aware of this Rays thing for a while. And like, and I was just like, Fuji's all over the place. And so I brought it up to Shea in May. Shea
I told doesn't, him in June, so Shea, that's...
But he doesn't know me from anybody. So like, he was kind of like, okay, But like, maybe I primed him for it. Then he was like, oh, okay, this is the second time I'm hearing it. Maybe I should listen.
Yeah, I love it. So
I think it goes a little bit against like what the catchers want to think they do. It's like, it's almost too simple. It's like, no, I'm a catcher, man. I provide good targets and I steal strikes and then it's nice for Shea to be like, hey, like, that's cool. Yeah. Do you want to make my job easier? And it's better for you.
You got
like,
to worry about.
I don't have to give you 8 targets. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I feel like receiving wise too, like the Rays catchers generally are pretty well rated.
Not always before they get them.
It's one of the things that they get better at when they go somehow. Like,
I think
it's
the
like,
A's didn't think Betancourt really? Was a catcher.
Yeah.
And they go over there and like, no, 1 target. We're going to simplify things.
And he wasn't the greatest receiver with a cannon arm, but he wasn't the greatest receiver. That's usually kind of the thing. And then you make it simple where you're just getting you're never giving away anything and you're grabbing a couple extra ones. That's the difference between being a really good receiver and being a bad receiver.
Plus, if you've got a peaker at bat, if you've just got 1 target every time and they're peeking, you're like, peek away, dude. Same target as last time.
Every handful of pitches, there'd be like a late move or something because they're trying to get it weighing off the player. They're trying to get it off, right? They're trying
to frame. Sometimes they might want to have your glove in a slightly different place.
But for the most part, it was just boom. And then as soon as you started your delivery or you looked away or whatever, they would like creep towards where they're like going to get in their comfortable position.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you have that target in your head and it's only that target ever. So it's easy if it moves to stay there. It's way more simple that way. Seems really logical, but everyone wants to make things. You're in the big leagues, you want it to be complicated, but sometimes it's not.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
It's to just come back to cleaning up mechanics, being more consistent to get everything to work more effectively. Is that the big part of it from the pitching
it's
side?
It's up here, I think. Being aggressive in the zone. So you play where you're trying to throw the ball, like you're like, okay, this is my intent. But if you went by like one, here's a standard I always have, within 2 inches. So like if the ball is 2.25 inches across, what is it? 3 inches, so whatever it is. That plus 2 inches on either side of the ball, and that becomes a spot, and that's a hit spot. Like guys hit their spots. Even the best guys with the best command hit their spots like 30%. Like it's like in that close is good, but like people aren't as pinpoint as they I think they are. Most guys aren't. There's a couple are, but most guys aren't. So you play your misses too. So you're like, if I throw it here, it's going to be great. But if I miss, where am I going to miss? And you try to think about that. Like, am I going to get hurt? Or is that still going to be in the strike zone and I'm still not going to get hurt? Will this be a strike and I won't give up a homer? Then I'm in. Yeah. So now you have this confidence. Like, it's a kind of a win-win in your head. And the more of those you can create in your head, the more you're in the zone, the more you're getting ahead, which in the because hitting's harder than pitching generally. It just kind of is. So you're letting guys get themselves out more often than not, and you're going to get beat a couple times. But if it's only because you're missing spots, then that's something you can work on as opposed to getting beat because you're making bad decisions. So they're just kind of taking the decision parts out of it. Make good decisions every time, and then let's go from there. Kind of like a poker player. Play the hands right. Don't get all excited. Just play the hands right. I know it's boring sometimes. It's simple. But if you really want to win, and you do this more often than not, you're going to be okay. It's very similar.
That can be hard, though, as a pitcher, especially like a reliever where
it's
like
boring.
One bad outing. And yeah, and also just like one bad outing and you're just like, damn, my ERA is going to be bad for 3 months.
Yep.
You know, and like someone's like, hey, this new idea, let's do that. And then you even go out in a spring game and you get blasted and you're like, well, there goes that
idea.
That's
gone. I'm never doing that again. Yeah. We can't afford to. Yeah, it sucks to make adjustments in games as a reliever or in season. It really sucks. Games are bullpens. We got to be ready every day.
Yeah, Chad's piece had a few examples of that, like Pete Fairbanks getting smashed coming off the IL and being upset, and Kyle Snyder, the pitching coach, saying, no, just trust it. It's going to work, and it did. He reeled off an amazing stretch after that, and it's just sort of like getting the situation constantly in your favor. Like the thing that Chad pointed out is every Rays pitcher seems to cite the 95% statistic of a first pitch quality strike. They say yields a positive result 95 times out of 100. So ideally it's a quick out, but every take, swing and miss, or foul ball puts the pitcher in control that at bat. Yes, 5% of the time that first pitch gets hammered, but the Rays love those odds and will live with the outliers. Right. Yeah.
I think that more swinging on first pitching is something they should do, because the difference in OPS between 1-0 and 0-1 is so big that pitchers are always going to be in the strike zone for the first pitch. That's they're going to always want to be in the strike zone for the first pitch. And if you know they're always going to want to be in the strike zone, then it's only a question of which pitch it is. And you don't have to actually think about location as much because it's probably going to be in the strike zone. So how many other counts are there? There are other counts. But how many other occurrences are there where you can be like, they're going to be in the zone? The best one is 0-0. You know, you don't even know you'll ever get to 3-0. Yes, 3-0, they're probably going to be in the zone.
I think about it more from like, if you're expecting a strike, you can get the ace swing off. You can just guess and be rewarded for it because you're narrowing down the possibilities of what's going to show up in the zone by just saying, okay, I think in this instance, this pitcher's probably going here with this. Take a hack at it. It's 0-1 if you're wrong, not the end of the world. So it's a pretty interesting thing to think about. Let's move on to our next topic, which I think is something we've wrestled with for a long time on this show. Sahadev Sharma wrote a story about Justin Steele. And Eno and I have wondered, how does Justin Steele do it seemingly with two pitches, right? Fastball, slider, that's what you see. And he gets guys to take uncomfortable swings. He gets guys kind of given that look as they walk back to the dugout, like, what the heck? Like, why didn't I hit that? And there's a bunch of guys in the league like this, but I think Steele's a really good recent example of someone who's reached a level that very few people would have projected or expected. And Sahadev's story focuses on how Justin Steele uses multiple shapes of those pitches. So you might look at Baseball Savant and see something like this. It's fast, it's four-seam or slider. It's almost entirely four-seam or slider. But it's not that simple. It's not just a four-seamer that looks the same every time or a slider that looks the same every time. There are these wrinkles. So, Trevor, how common is it for guys to have multiple variations of a small arsenal that might look like a two-pitch arsenal on paper but play more like four or five pitches in the minds of hitters?
It's definitely rare. He is he's actually, Justin Steele's like become a favorite amongst pitchers because he just makes it look so easy. And it feel like, again, like when you look up there, he's a two-pitch pitcher. He's not, but like everyone's like, oh, he just does it with two pitches. He's doing this well. But it's very clear he manipulates the ball in different ways, which is very, very interesting. But like, not many guys can do it. I mentioned in our prep meeting for this, Sergio Romo was a guy who everyone's like, oh, he's just a slider guy. He threw three different sliders. He could throw a sweeping one. He could throw a both two plane one. He could throw a depth one. So it was like, it was a curveball kind of the whole time, but he could change the direction in which it was. He can manipulate it towards the end of there. He'd roll out of bed and do it. So the guys like this exist. So you see on this graphic too, we talked about this, the circles, like that slider circle right there, that is really big. And the bigger that is, it's the wider range of different kinds of movements and velos attached to that pitch. I actually went and found a few. I put an overlay in. I don't know if it's usable, but it's of three different pitches that are all classified as sliders for Justin Steele. And here's the three different movement profiles on those three. So all three of them are between 82 and 84 miles an hour. So I don't have the exacts here, but I know that for sure. These range from 23.1 inches of horizontal, negative 25 vert. That was a big one. That could be a curveball, but it's also a lot of horizontal. That's kind of a sweeper. That was at 82. And then he has one at 18 and zero vert. So that's up 3 inches of vert, which is, and this one was 84. So it was harder and moved a little bit more two plane. And then he has one at 85. So you can see the little L that's making right there. Then he is, or 86, that one up that was up right there was 8.5 horizontal, 4.6 vert. So that's a cutter. And those are all classified as sliders on Savant. That's what he's doing. He's trying to get things. He thinks, I bet you he knows whether or not guys hit the harder ones worse, or they hit the softer ones worse, or if he wants more of a backdoor situation for like a, you know, he's doing it. He's doing that in real time, but it's like very similar grips for him. It's very natural. So he can like play that game. And then I bet you the catcher just goes, slider me, could mean any of those things. Towards the end, like we only had one grip, for example, we had slider as our sweeper and slider pitch call last year. I was throwing a slider at 86 and a sweeper at 80. Like those are different. Those are very different. But Shea figured it out. He's like, I know when it's probably going to be sweeper and when it's probably going to be slider. I just like, I'm going with
you. Yeah, by handedness count a lot of times.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah. And then towards the end, I'd be like, I'm throwing a throw sweepers earlier in counts. He's like, okay, I'll be ready for it at all times. And then it was fine. I never had to tell him. So like, I guarantee you they have that situation going over there too. But that's why he's been so good, because how do you game plan for that when you look and it says there's only two pitches and you go face and you're like, I just got three different sliders. Like, yeah. You help me out. And then they're like, I don't know what he's doing. And then he beats you, you lose. Now, when everyone hears that conversation happening, they're like, well, I guess go get him tomorrow. And that's kind of what happened all year.
Yeah, that's that look of confusion, though. I was like, wait a minute, like, that wasn't supposed to be there. The report said this. And I think part of this is also how Steele keeps a pretty low home run rate, too. Like, I think everyone in a lot of the circles for fantasy baseball think, oh, home run rates, like, it's pretty noisy, and it is. But I think there is some skill to maintaining a lower home run rate that goes beyond just getting the ball on the ground, right? It's not just ground ball rate. And I think these types of wrinkles, to me, are a satisfactory sort of explanation for how you would sustain a better than average home run rate year over year without having guys just pound the ball into the ground.
And if they think it's a slider, but they got the cutter version of the slider, then that's going to be slightly off the barrel. And it might be contact, but it might not be, you know, good contact. And so, yeah, I tend to think that any successful guy that we think is a two-pitch pitcher has been doing something like this, because that seems to be when I kind of talk to people that I'm sort of surprised about. Like, they're like, oh, yeah, there's kind of, you know, my first example is Shane Green, who, you know, had like four breaking balls. And I do think the thing that becomes difficult about it is keeping some sort of differentiation in your mind, being able to actually replicate the shapes that you're trying to replicate. It takes a lot of touch and feel, I think, to be able to throw three breaking balls or four breaking balls. Max Scherzer told me that one of the big things he does between starts is try to find all the breaking balls, because he now, you know, it doesn't show up in every book, but like, he now throws like a power slider. He throws a cutter, a power slider, a regular slider, a slow slider, and a curve. And I don't know, you know, I don't think any of them are actually a sweeper, but some of them were more horizontal and some of them were vertical. Some of them more speedy, some are slower. And when you have that many breaking balls, it requires a lot of touch, requires a lot of work in between. And like, when you like, just imagine, like, you think you're throwing one, you throw the other. That could go right into the hitting zone. So, I think what I'm trying to say is, I think it's still somewhat risky to have quote unquote two pitches as Justin Steele does, because there's so much touch required in keeping those different breaking balls separated, you know, that what he could just easily lose that touch, or, you know, it's really kind of small movements. He may have the same grip on all of them. You know, and it's just a little bit of finger pressure in a different place, or just intent. It's like, I'm gonna throw this one harder and it does this. When I throw this one over there, it does this. When I throw this one softer, it does this. That might be all it is. And so I feel like there's still some risk that can blend together. I don't know, maybe Trevor has a different idea, but like, I do think that if you are getting super fine with it, like, there is some risk that you do the wrong thing with it.
They're all attached to each other. So that's a good point. So if you lose a feel on one, the chance you lose feel on all of them is high. Because they're all kind of related. And so if you use the same grip for everything, you lose kind of the feel of that grip. You're probably going to lose some feel for all the other places. So if they're not distinguished, it's not something you can be like, okay, plan B, this is feels like a difference. So maybe I'll get myself going here. Sometimes I did that with I could not throw a fastball for a strike. So I needed to throw some changeups in the zone, because that would get me better around the zone.
What's the saying? Different day, different arm.
Yeah, exactly. So
you
like,
get out there and you're just like, whoa, today the slider's no good. What do you do if you're Justin Steele?
You might be a two-pitch pitcher with four pitches, but then it's very easy for you to turn into a one-pitch pitcher. So it goes like, either you have four or one.
Yeah, right.
That can give you like, yeah, your parachute isn't very good in this, your backup. You don't really have a backup. So having a changeup or a splitter or something, that even if it's not good, that you can just go to for, I mean, he does technically, but it's what, 1% usage? Like, and that curveball, also the curveballs he threw, those were sliders. They were bigger.
But I talked to David Getty about Sergio Romo. It's funny you brought him up. And I was like, you know, why is his home run rate high? You know, he strikes out a lot of people. And is it just that, you know, that he's a fastball slider guy and lefties are taking him deep? And Righetti thought, no, when you throw that many sliders, some days you just lose the feel. Yeah, and it's sort of what you're talking about, you know? It's like, it's slider after slider after slider. And I feel like, you know, that can happen with a fastball. Yes, you can have a day where your fastball command is off and it's totally not there, right? But at least when your fastball command is off, at least it's 95 still. You know what I mean? If your slider command is off,
and it's
85.
Not moving.
You know? It's 80.
When the command tends to leave too, you can't, it's not very good either. So it's like also not sharp. That they go together, which sucks.
Now these cement mixers at 80, which one's easier to heart? Easier to hit, like a misplaced 95 mile an hour fastball, or like a misplaced cement mixer 80 mile an hour slider thing?
And you're right on Sergio, by the way. His came guys who have him come in bunches, it's usually, and he'd give up like two in an outing and then two in the next outing and then just would not give up a run for 2 months. That's how Sergio was. But like overall, his home run would be because he would just lose it for a couple of days. He'd be tired or sore or whatever, and he'd give a bunch of homers. That's exactly what happened. But it would never happen consistently. It was always in like little isolated, like 1 week bunches.
Just lost the slider for a couple of days.
There were two questions from Discord about this. It was alerts on the server that was asking. And even the first question I have is for you. Is this an area where Stuff Plus may be missing out, having multiple shapes within the same pitch? Would that kind of spit out a strange result?
Theoretically, no, not among secondaries, because every pitch is looked at separately. Pitch type doesn't mean as much among secondaries. Now, like if he was doing this in the fastballs, maybe. I think guys that have multiple fastballs and have great feel for all of them may actually be tough for Stuff Plus, because Stuff Plus wants to find your primary pitch and build everything off of that. So if you have three fastballs, Stuff Plus is theoretically being like, oh, which one do we define it off of? I don't know, you know? And that's the hitter's doing the same thing. If you've got three fastballs, the hitter's like, oh, if it's hard, it's crap. One of three things. You know, that's why Lance Lynn was so good for so long. It was hard, yes, but you didn't know which one it was. But among sliders, Stuff Plus is looking at each pitch separately. So it might like the sweepy one more and one of the other ones less, but it's evaluating each of them separately.
The other question that came in I thought was kind of interesting was for Trevor specifically. Is it beneficial for a pitcher to throw maybe their nastiest slider, someone like Romo? If you got three different sliders, do you throw the nastiest one first, or maybe throw the one with the least amount of break first earlier in the count, kind of steal the strike, and then throw the filthiest one later? Like, how do you set up a hitter using the variations? Is that something that you would always want to do if you had that in your tool bag?
I think especially with a guy like Sergio, you know, didn't throw super hard and kind of had it was just known for the slider. He did throw a lot more changeups, a guy that people think, but he was just a very, very high usage of that pitch. That has to be part of your sequencing. And so you might just randomly jumble them up and pick one that you want to throw first, or depending on the guy, because he was pretty smart, knew had faced a lot of guys and knew them all pretty intuitively, on like what type of if they're trying to jump you early, if they're trying to jump you late, if it was one of those guys. And those are patterns that have actually really, really become clearer and clearer with scouting reports on hitters. Like, they are looking, they have counts that they know are the most advantageous for them, and that's when they take their big swings or take their shots. So you would throw your nasty one then and just kind of save it. You can know that now a little bit more. It's the same thing kind of like how I try to make decisions with the gyro and the sweeper last year. The sweeper was trying to get the miss, and because no one was swinging and missing my gyro, but guys were hitting on the ground and hitting it earlier. So I've tried to go earlier with the harder one and later with the softer one.
And then you even said, you told Shay, now we're going to switch it up. Yeah.
Because people started to notice that, like, they would be like, okay, now I have two strikes, I'm probably gonna get a sweeper here. And then I was getting guys frozen with the gyro because they thought it was going to break more. It was harder.
And that's the big Sergio Romo moment with Miguel Cabrera to win the World Series.
Through the heater. Yeah.
Because he threw the heater instead of the slider. Yeah.
And he said it. I thought that was a guy. You have to just say slider. Like, you have, like, in that situation, I just guessed wrong. Froze me.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
As it turns out, sliders and sweepers are the deep dive.
Yeah, we keep talking about
it. Seems like everything's falling into place perfectly. I mean, Trevor, you were just talking about the gyro versus the sweeper. I mean, those are kind of the two ends, right? If you think of sliders being on a spectrum of just like one end we have this, we have the other end we have that. What are the key differences here? Like, help people sort of understand, like, they used to be classified as the same. They got split out as separate pitches. So what are we looking at here?
The reason they got split out as different pitches is because of the idea of pitch design. So people are like, I want to make this pitch do something specific. And then so their movement profiles being pretty different became more and more important for pitchers to distinguish when they were making the pitch. So like that's why it became a word that was being used by pitchers a lot, is because it was literally a different pitch in their mind because they were trying to learn it and they didn't want it to be a gyro. So like that distinction happened. Then we started using the terms. The interesting thing about so just sweeper goes sideways and, you know, gyros are two plane or more depth generally. Like that's just kind of what it is. Gyros also tend to be harder than sweepers. Like I mentioned earlier in the show, you want to slow down a sweeper to get it to move. Or maybe I said that right before the show. I actually can't remember. But you want it to, slower is actually a little bit better. See Jason Adam throwing at 77 and getting it to move 25 inches. Like slower is actually better because seam shifted wake, the thing that keeps the ball up, can act on it longer. And it generally does stay. Like you don't lose your seam shifter wake as the pitch goes, like other pitches would with gravity. Like it stays on that buffer of air until he catches it. For a lot of times, you throw a really good one. So we started making the distinguish them that way, so that you could design one or design the other one. But gyro, I mean, a lot of people old school people think of that as like Dice K throwing the gyro, right? But in reality, it was just like a looser slider that didn't break the same way that, like the guys who were trying to throw the dot or the tight dot, you see the bullet spin of the dot. That's traditional slider. That's kind of what a gyro is now. Like that's what we use our that term now to use it. So it's a traditional slider you're trying to get either however it moves naturally for you. So I threw that too. I got more depth. I always had more depth. I really struggled with horizontal, but it was okay because it worked with my forcing fastball. So it was basically a hard curveball without the action on the pitch. It was just the way it moved and the way I threw. It was just weird. It was a little weird. The spin didn't really tell you how it was going to move like other people's were going to move.
Well, that's a big component of the gyro, is that the spin does not contribute to movement. It's a very low spin efficiency pitch. So it's spinning, but it doesn't move. So that's I think, of one of the better gyro sliders in the league right there. That's Yusei Kikuchi. Let's see it again. It's hard. It's 90, and it looks like a bullet.
Yeah, and it goes down a little bit, yeah.
And it just goes down a little bit. Versus your fastball, though, there's a big difference because your fastballs have ride and sink, and so they're doing a lot of things. The four seam, so the bullet slider is different from the fastball. But, you know, we have these like sort of movement ways to describe movement, and one of the ways you can describe a gyro is often you'll hear pitchers say, I want to get 0-0, or I want to get close to 0-0. And that means, like, just a bullet. And here what we're looking at is you're looking at velo versus drop. Drop is on the y-axis, velo is on the x-axis, and stuff plus is best. Basically, you see how velo just makes everything better, but velo plus drop I think are probably the best gyro sliders. So that's maybe the power curvy, you know, the kind of just a hard but has some downward. Those are the best gyro sliders. In black is Yusei Kikuchi's right there, the black dotted line. So he's in the red. He's in a good spot. That's a good place to be. Hard breaking balls. We talked about this in context with injuries, but the best thing you can do with a gyro, I think, is make it 90 and have, you know, like a zero vert. That's the dark red right there.
That's like the Goldilocks zone for a tunnel with your fastball too, because the move, you don't want a pitch to move too much differently than your fastball. So slower it gets and the bigger it moves, the more earlier it breaks generally and doesn't tunnel your fastball, which is an issue I had in 22 and changed my slider grip in order to make it smaller and harder. And I remember the first one I threw coming back after I had like three swings and misses on it all year, and it was like July. And then I threw it. The next one I threw was a punch out. The next one I threw. So I missed that. I was like at 88. I was like, oh, it works. So yeah, that's the big thing too. You want it. So you throw a gyro, you want it to, you're tunneling with your fastball. Sweeper too, but you're also getting more chases and you're trying to get it to move more. And it's just a little bit of a different setup. But so that's just kind of what people are doing.
Well, the nice thing about a gyro slider is also the platoon splits are smaller. It like, right? Like that. And it's easier to command because it's a smaller shape. So was that the gyro slider was something that you could do other than the changeup that you could do to lefties?
To lefties, yeah. I threw one sweeper to a lefty and almost like died. only Eddie Rosario could get out of the way of this, and he did. But it was Shea dove and caught it, and I'm like, yeah, that's I was going to take a shot. Because it's Eddie. I'm like, I might have been able to get him to swing it. If that was 3 inches farther in, he might have swung at it. But yeah, I had to stay fastball changeup after that, and he got me in a double into the corner. So I wish I would have thrown a better one. But yeah, I threw a lot more gyros to lefties, 100%. And also my splits against, like, they really struggled with it as well. Like they actually hit it worse than my changeup. So I was like, the fastball was actually thinking me hit fit. So I was like, I got both changeup and slider to lefties, and then I have sweeper, slider, fastball, changeup to righties. It's a pretty good place to be.
Theoretically, if you're like evaluating Yusei Kikuchi, like can he be a starting pitcher? Can he be successful against right-handers? You know, one thing you have to think about is like, you know, I was talking to a pitching coach that said that the two, what he thinks are most important is that you have a command pitch and an action pitch that work against each side. So he said the easiest way to do this is ask, does he have a fastball and does he have a cutter or a gyro slider? You know, does he have a four-seam fastball and does he have a cutter or gyro slider? And if the answer is yes to both of those, then you can be a starting pitcher, even though you're a quote-unquote two-pitch pitcher, because at the very least, you have two pitches that work against the left and two pitches that work against the right. I tend to think that Yusei Kikuchi is going to be fine. I think the curveball addition is good and widening his arsenal is good, but with a guy with bad natural command, which I think even Kikuchi might like agree with, you know, you have these hard shapes. You have the hard fastball, the hard small slider. That was a really good foundation to give someone that needs to get guys from both sides out and also doesn't have great natural command.
I was trying to see if I had the leaderboard handy for just the slider, since they are separate. And I would imagine Kikuchi did well overall. Yeah, he was a +8 in run value, not like at the top of the board.
Sometimes the run value is way higher on pitches that you can surprise people with. Like people know he's going to throw that slider over and over again, and still he has good values on it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that changed everything for him too was just getting the walk rate down. He was in the 6% range last year, which seemed impossible the first couple seasons that we saw Kikuchi pitching in the big leagues. I think we should watch this Ottavino clip here for a second for like a great extreme thing. Sweeper Shoo! Example. Like, what do you? Like, let's watch it again. Like, what are you gonna do there?
It's like 20 inches.
That was really good. Dude, he has one from I think it's 22 of Duvall swinging at it. It's almost off the camera frame. And he right down the middle. It might have been the biggest miss of that year. That's one to also just go look up if you ever get a minute. We don't have to do it here, but it's great. And Duvall swings. He's like, yep. I was sitting sinker.
And he went the other no way. Problem with 30 like that. Inches the other way.
Him. I love him and Renfro. They'll swing and miss by 6 feet if they don't care.
This one is the same as the last one in terms of velo is on the x-axis, but on the y-axis this time is horizontal movement. And again, you'll see the same kind of movement pattern where, yes, velo is good for sweepers. You know, Griffin Jacks was always told me that the reason why my sweeper is one of the best in the game is I throw it 88, you know, and it still gets the 15s or whatever, you know. And what you see here is if you follow the line there for 80, I think what we're looking at is Sonny Gray's in black, and that's in a great spot. But if you follow the line for 88 and 15s, you find Griffin Jacks, and he's solidly in a dark red spot too. So I like when the interaction charts show you this, which is like, you know, this is a takeaway you can have. What's good for sweepers? Really big horizontal movement and velo. And so if you can combine anything over 85 with anything over 15, you've got a good sweeper. You can do better at 82 with a sweep. You can do fine with 82, but then you have to get sort of 20s.
Yeah, you get tons of movement. Man.
You got to have the tons of movement. So there's just a kind of almost, it looks like a linear relationship between horizontal movement and velo, where you're just like, you know, you better get a lot of velo if it doesn't have the good sweep, or you got to get a lot of sweep if it doesn't have the good velo.
Yeah, I think this is interesting too, because Gray is atop the sweeper run value leaderboard, and he throws that pitch like 20% of the time. It was a +19, by far the most effective sweeper in run value.
I think he should have change it up a little bit in the postseason, you know, but it was such a good pitch. Like, what are you going to tell him not to throw it?
Yeah, that's off the charts good. Otani pretty high on that list with a +9. A lot of relievers, Justin Lawrence, Evan Phillips, Steven Wilson, Brooks Raley, all really high up on that list for last season.
Well, it has bad platoon splits. So we talked about how the gyro slider has good platoon splits. The sweeper, I think they just see it. It has such big movement. It's a little bit slower usually. And for a lefty, they just see that thing forever. And I think that lefties mostly just take it. But even if they do, when they do swing at it, they're like, this thing's coming middle. I can see it. And they can see it and see it and see it. And so, you know, that's why I think you see more sweepers among relievers. And I think that's why you see that, like, we're discussing if sweepers are hurting people, and they're 3% of the population. It's like we had this whole craze about a thing that was thrown 3% of the time in big leagues. It was because more and more people realize, I can't use this against lefties. So like, yeah, it's a good one against righties. But like Jameson Taillon was like, oh, look at my new sweeper. And then he had a terrible first half. And by the second half, he's like, okay, now I know how to like fold the sweeper into the other things I do. I'm not going to be like, look at this great sweeper I throw every time. And, you know, try to throw it to Eddie Rosario. Don't do that.
Well, you got to throw it to a free swing.
Yeah, it might be the one we'll person.
Waiting for it to come back over. He saw it out of your hand. He's like, I'm swinging. I'm going to swing it.
Makes sense to me. If you're going to throw one to a lefty, throw it to him. We'll take a few questions if anybody else on the stream has them. And I got one that caught my eye really early on. The question was from James. Is that the Airbnb that smells like meat?
Oh, yeah. I've had an Airbnb where the elevator went out and I had to do 11, 12 flights of stairs this week up and down from my apartment. The bed is a sofa bed. The bed I'm supposed to sleep on, I thought would be a regular bed, is a sofa bed. And for some reason it smells like meat, and you know, it's not totally unpleasant. It's somebody cooking for themselves and people live there. That's an okay thing. I can't tell you not to cook meat, but when I come back at like 10 or 11 and I just want to go to bed, like meat is not what I want to smell. You know, it's like, oh, bulgogi tonight. Then?
Like your neighbor or something every night.
I think it's a design flaw. So it's one of these buildings that's supposed to be like, you can stay like a hotel, but you could live there, you know, like something in between. They don't have any hoods. So if you're like cooking, that smell is just permeating your apartment and I guess the apartment next to yours. And so
I feel like that's not legal. I don't know why. I feel like having a hood is like part of having to, yeah. I don't know. I feel like that's not like something in code.
Yeah, it's gotta be part of the code. You have to have some kind of ventilation, especially in a high rise. Come on.
I would assume it's a flaw of the ventilation system, however it is.
We got a more on brand question for us here from Saul. Which pitchers that throw a sweeper would benefit from a gyro slider, given that it's easier to control?
Well, I always thought like, you know, Clark Schmidt throws a cutter and a sweeper, and it's like, I think that he could almost throw a gyro, not necessarily because of control, but just because of against lefties. He's really searching for something against lefties. You know, Hayden Wesnensky throws a sweeper and has control issues.
Those type of guys, would be the best.
But he has a cutter. So a lot of one of the packages you have for a pitcher is kind of cutter, sinker, sweeper. Because again, like we were talking about earlier, the mechanics are somewhat similar on a lot of those pitches. And I guess you just don't want to have them throwing like three breaking balls and lose touch on all of them. Aaron Civale, like, you know, has done this thing where, you know, he's a curveball cutter guy. And he de-emphasized the slider with the Guardians, and I think it's because of command. But the Rays were like, we're going to give you one target, and we want you to throw all three of these breaking balls. He's gone up and down with it. It hasn't all been positive with him doing that approach. But I think generally pitching coaches know about this. So I think it would be surprising if a pitcher hadn't thought of adding a gyro slider, you know, because they were having trouble commanding the sweeper.
Guys that are throwing cutters and a sweeper, that's what they're trying to accomplish.
It's the cutter might even be a gyro slider.
Yeah, they might just be thinking of them as way different pitches so that they can throw them both. Like that, exactly, that a lot of that comes down to that. Like distinguishing between them is just for you so that you can feel that difference.
Rasmussen has a gyro slider, a sweeper, and a power curve, and they're listed as cutter, slider, and curve.
Yeah. So, and that's where Savant then gets confused sometimes because guys are doing the same things, but they classify them differently. And it gets confusing sometimes. And that's just probably what's going to happen. So, sorry, guys. you're going to go and you're going to have to like look at the movement profile and be like, this flow profile is more as we're hoping to help you do here at the show, on the show.
What's a good way to differentiate a cutter from a gyro slider? I guess a cutter you'd expect to have 4, 6, 7 vert.
Yeah. And high velo.
Maybe similar horizontal. But to a gyro slider. But I think when you start seeing like sort of 5, 6, 7, like above 5 vert, that's more likely in sort of cutter territory. And when you start seeing more like 0 vert, that's more gyro slider territory. That's a pretty small difference, but breaking balls are all in this continuum. So it's kind of hard sometimes to separate them out.
got a breaking news item. Buster Olney is reporting Joey Votto has signed an NRI deal with the Blue Jays. Baseball's better with Joey Votto in it. I think that's a fair statement to make.
I was going to see if he'd come join, just like be my co-host on YouTube, but eventually now he's got a job. Dang it.
Well, 2025, right? I mean, you got to have a multi-year roadmap.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Vogelbach, but I could see the Blue Jays making this decision. I guess, you know, a big part of it will be like, how hard is he hitting it in spring? Like, exit velocities will matter here. They're going to be like, how good is your shoulder? Like, how are you feeling? Like, let's see what the exit velocity.
It's a little interesting on a roster that also has Justin Turner on it. If you keep Votto, you're going to have to play Turner somewhere on the infield a little bit because you have Vlad playing first. So I hope he makes it. I'm rooting for him.
I think you could maybe sneak Turner in at second.
They have the need between second and third.
And a lot of those guys who can play second can play third for
Who's
them.
Who's it now? So like IKF, right? At third?
Yeah. I mean, IKF can play second or third. Doesn't matter. Yeah, Santiago Espinal can play second or third. Doesn't matter. I think even Biggio can play second or third. So where do you think it's easier to hide a veteran? I think it may be a little bit easier on the at second.
Yeah, maybe. That might be a better solution for sure.
You got all those like smashed hot shots from righties right at third base. You kind of want to have, you know, some hops, some range.
I guess Turner was actually one of the better defensive players on Boston last year. I don't know if that's a reflection of him or them, though.
I kind of think they might just play him at third, dude. Like, I think they might just put him back out there.
If he hits 305, I don't think it matters what he does out there.
Yeah, I think you live with it in that case. Beluco 31 has a question. What's going to be the next sweeper, the new pitch that takes over baseball? Because it does sound like the sweeper might be at or near its saturation point for usage based on the limitations you were describing, especially righties not really being able to throw them to lefties. Is this the year of the splitter? Is that what we've decided?
That's what everyone's talking about.
I mean, thank you, Senga. It's his fault. And now we have Yamamoto too. Yeah, it's going to be splitter fork. But we're going to see like more like true forkball. Like guys are actually trying to throw the old school 90s fork because it's hard.
Like the kind of the knuckling action pop out of the...
Tumbling knuckle action. Get if you can, like that would be something no one would see. So that could be really good for a while. And then obviously to get adjusted. But yeah, now we have the breaking balls. Kind of guys have like figured out ways to throw breaking balls that didn't have good... Couldn't figure it out before. Now the guys who could not, there's so many guys who like just have given up on changeups or splitters, and now they're able to pitch design them more. So now,
we're getting better at pitch design. I think it's definitely in the changeup space. We're because if you think about like the breaking ball space, we've like, you know, in this show we talk about two different breaking balls that you could call a slider, but there's such a continuum, and there's even a thing called a death ball that people are talking about, which is somewhere between a curveball and a slider. In that it's like it's a one plane 12-6 baby power curve is how I describe it. It's the Fairbanks breaking ball. And so people, I think we're running out of places to go in the breaking ball space. You know, there's no more places to circle and be like, what is this? You know, let's do that. But change up, you know, people think of, oh, well, you either got it, you don't. Oh, you just have to pronate everything. Well, there's change ups you don't have to pronate. There's power changes. We've done a little bit of that, but I think we stayed away from it for some part because it's hard to describe in Hawkeye, and like, but Seam Shifter Wake is getting us better at it. We're better being able to replicate things. So we talked about a little bit about lefty splitters on an episode about, you know, people think that you're not throwing, that lefties can't throw splitters. And that's because they think of splitters as sort of a binary thing. This is how you hold it between these two fingers. You throw it like this. That's a splitter. Well, there are splitters that you curl this finger and it kind of, ooh.
Every week.
Balloons.
The balloons are back.
There's a splitter where you curl this finger. That's like a totally different thing. Then there's like a Foch. And then there's like a splitter, a Vulcan. There's all these different fingers that were like, that I think the Vulcan could be the next one. You know, because like really who threw a Vulcan? Was it Kyle Loesch?
Big leagues? I don't know many. I knew some guys in the minors.
Straley like holds it in a split finger kind of, but he said that when he looked at it on the edger, it actually comes off like a Vulcan. So, you know, there's some people out there that with the Edgertronic plus a better sense of like different variations on each of these grips, teams are doing more grip libraries and stuff. So, you know, as you have a grip library and you put that together with Seam Shifter Wake and you kind of put those two things together, I think the big explosion is going to be the changeup space. The next thing that has a new name is going to be a changeup, some sort of changeup. The Splonk.
I think
it's going to be called the Splonk.
Yeah.
Not the splinker, please. We've already we're good at that.
We'll get the splinker or the splork.
We got to work on naming these things. It does. It feels like children are naming pitches. That's what it kind of feels like.
Just combining two words like that. That's your go-to when you're seven. So, yeah, I guess.
Yeah,
I guess that's.
I'm sure if I invented a pitch when I was a kid, that's all I did, to just smash two words together. Like, that's what it is. Philip says, "Bring back the palm
there
ball."
There you go.
I played with somebody who threw a palm ball. Why? Did not work. Just threw a knuckleball.
It doesn't seem like it would.
Well, the fork is the one of the ways the fork works is by getting it closer to your palm, right? It's deeper in.
Deeper in. But it's harder. That's the thing. That's how palm ball work. It should work. But like palm balls are slow. So like, I don't know. You're just, it was like for people who couldn't throw knuckleballs who were trying to get
it. We have a
funky
death
pitch.
Ball. I like this one. Dan G says Dragon Ball. I like that.
Ooh, I like that too.
Yeah. What does the Dragon Ball do? It has like some sort of whippy tail, you know?
Whippy tail. It's got to be high velo, right? If it's a Dragon Ball.
It's like some very variation on the power change.
Full Major League. Everyone should just name their stuff. Like, everyone should have nicknames for the pitches. I think that's fun, too. I love the Ghost Fork. I love that he has a thing. Yeah, I think we need more of that in baseball for sure. Yeah. Where guys are just making up ridiculous names.
Yeah. That's a lot more fun. The Ghost Fork is a lot more fun.
Oh yeah, I'm still working on this Yu Darvish like oral history of all his pitches. It's something that's on the back burner. I'm going to come out with it. I got all his grips, and he used to call he had something that was between the sinker and the fork that he called the supreme.
It was like a Taco Bell menu.
Yeah, he said eventually it didn't make any sense to throw it because it was too much. It was like too close to his. The more he threw the sinker, he was like, "Okay, I've got a sinker, I've got a fork, and I've got this thing in between. It's not differentiating enough."
I love how much he loves pitching. That's my favorite. Yeah. Listen to him talk about stuff and make stuff up on the fly. It's awesome. That's how it should be.
I bet Darvish has invented pitches and then forgotten 100%.
About them
every year. He's thrown so many different pitches.
Our bullpen coach last year worked with you a lot because he's the AAA coach the year before in spring. And so just listen to him talk. And he's like, he makes up like a new pitch every couple months just for fun. Like 90% of them don't ever get thrown in the game. But sometimes he'll like, you'll see two pitches. You're like, what was that? And then he'll be like, I don't like it. And they'll never throw it again. But he threw it in two big league games. But that's what's the fun part about baseball for him. So it's like, keep going for it. Just don't, man, maybe do that not in playoff games.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's what regular season games in May are up for. Like, just, you know, have a little fun out there. Nothing wrong with that.
Throw the supreme.
We are good to go on our way out the door. Reminder, you can get a subscription to The Athletic. A lot of great stories this week and every week. TheAthletic.com/ratesandbarrels. $2 a month gets you in for the first year. Pretty good deal there. Be sure to join our Discord. We got the link in the show description. Got a listener survey as well. Just let us know about some of your listener habits. There's a chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card too. So theathletic.com/survey24 will get you that link. We'll put that in the show description as well. Find us on Twitter. Trevor is at I am Trevor May. Eno is at Eno Saris. I am at Derek Van Riper. The podcast is at Rates in Barrels. Have a great weekend. We're back with you on Monday.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.